Welcome to the Junior Golf Blueprint, episode 36, presented by Matt Walter, PGA Teaching Professional. Today's podcast, we have James Hong. He's a fellow coach up in New York. He does great work with kids. He's a fantastic junior golf coach. I'm very fortunate to be able to have him on this podcast. I met him down at the PGA show for the first time this past year. I've followed his stuff on Instagram and social media, and he's just a wizard when it comes to teaching kids, does a great job, and he's also very insightful on the social media platform. So this is a great little interview. Hope you enjoy it. We had a lot of laughs, a lot of fun, so enjoy, and hope you take something away from this podcast.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, so today on the podcast, I've invited a friend of mine named James Hong. He's a fellow coach up in New York, does a great job teaching kids and has great programming, so I thought he'd be a great insight for the podcast today. Mr. Hong, say hello to our friends out there.
Hello, everyone. How you doing?
You couldn't avoid it, could you?
I started hearing you, and I know I'm going to start talking like this in about 30 seconds.
Oh, what a great intro. James, give us a little bit of insight about yourself. We already know you're hilarious, so let's go ahead and tell me a little bit more about who you are.
Well, what I am is I'm the director of instruction up here at Harbor Links Golf Course, which is located here in Port Washington, New York. We're literally halfway between downtown Manhattan and Bethpage Black.
Man, what a location that is.
Yep.
How long have you been there?
This is going on, I think, it's probably 15 years now.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it just flew by.
So what chose you to kind of focus your efforts towards junior golf? Why did you pick that avenue?
I think it's just something that just I had an affinity for since I was a kid. I mean, even going back to elementary school, gym classes, Little League, I always enjoyed listening to the teachers or the coaches, how the game was played and taught, strategy, all that kind of stuff. I got really into that. And just as I kept getting older and older, I just kept working with kids on, no matter what the sport was. And, you know, I was always that kid who was not only watching my team or teammates for Little League or something like that, but also the other team and figuring out what would I say, what would I do. And as I got older, I was actually a competitive fencer. And fencing, the way it's taught, the way it's coached and everything, is it's very similar to golf. And so, you know, I think that's kind of like what started me on that road towards coaching. And it just seemed to be that one of the things we were always told to do is observe our opponents, mm-hmm, as they competed against other people. And you're always looking for weaknesses and strengths. And I found that I would start thinking more as a coach than a competitor. In a sense of, hey, you know, if I were giving that guy a lesson, what would I work on with them?
Sure. Yeah. You know, and that brings up an interesting point too, that I think sometimes kids can overlook, is that we, and people playing golf in general, is that we get so caught up in worrying about ourselves that sometimes we miss an opportunity to learn from the other people in our group.
Yep, absolutely. And that's something that I try to get across to a lot of people, no matter what the level is just keep watching others, keep learning, keep observing and seeing what you can pick up. And especially for the more competitive juniors, is when they see somebody that they feel like is really good, or I point out somebody, it's coming back to me and giving me some questions, asking me some things that they saw, or I'll ask them a question and say, what did you notice about this person?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, it's funny, like when I was a kid growing up, you know, I always felt like when I played with kids who are better than me, my game would like elevate a little bit. Like I would almost try and play up to their level. And then if I played with somebody who was maybe not as good as I was, you know, my level would kind of like slump down almost, you know, and it's kind of like you kind of play to the other competitors occasionally if you're not careful. But when I played with those kids that were better, I mean, the knowledge you can absorb was unbelievable.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that when you're working with juniors, and especially as they start to get a little bit more serious with their game and being a little bit more competitive, it's actually a good way for us coaches to find out mentally where they are. Because if they're really looking forward to playing with kids that are older or better than them, that's a big stepping stone, as opposed to having a kid who's afraid to do that. So to me, that's a little bit of a mark where I'm going, all right, I may have to work a little bit on their mental game as they develop.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, that's funny about the PGA Junior League, because you're pairing up in two-person scramble format.
Right.
Typically I like to pair my better players with the kids that are a little bit weaker. And it's funny to me because, like, it can go a couple of different ways, right? You can have, like, the better player just completely be aloof to the kid that needs the help. He's more worried about his own game. Or they can, like, coach up the younger kid that may not be as good as they are. And then the younger kid can kind of go two ways, too. They can either sit there and go, man, he's kicking my butt. I'm not really as good as he is. And they get down on themselves. Or they go, wow, that was really cool. Jackson hit it so far. You know?
And it's, right, exactly.
It's interesting how those dynamics can kind of take shape.
Yep, definitely. That's a good point. It's and that's why it's like when the kids are starting to get too down on themselves, or they see another kid who's – and they think that, oh, I'm never going to be as good as them. It's also a good teaching moment where you can step in at some point and say to them, hey, you know, there was a point where he or she was just like you are right now, and look at where they are now. So
Absolutely. You can
be just as good, if not better.
Absolutely. And I think that's the tough part with kids too, and is that they all grow so differently. You know, sometimes you have that 13-year-old who's almost 6 feet tall, then you got the 13-year-old who's barely 5'1". and it's like, you know, how do you explain to the kid that's not quite pushing 6 feet that it's okay you don't hit it 260 like the other 13-year-old in your group?
Yeah, I mean, and actually for me, because I'm short, I mean, everyone always makes fun of me. But what happens is that sometimes I'll go out and play with a couple of the kids that are taller than me. And I'll go back and I'll say, look, that kid's, you know, 6 inches taller than me or whatever. And he didn't beat me, or it's like, well, he should have played better because I don't practice, I don't play. And that kid practices 3 hours a day. And yet I still was within a shot or two or even beat them. So
that's right.
Right. Or I can point out, hey, look at so-and-so. They outdrove me on every hole by 30 yards. And yet we both walked off the hole with a par.
Right. Yeah. That's what I tell a lot of the kids that are, you know, disadvantaged in length at the time. You know, first thing I tell them is like, one, trust me, you have a growth spurt coming up. You're not done growing and getting stronger yet. So don't give up on the fact you don't hit it quite as far. But two, it's like, beat the brains out of them in with short game. Like,
yep.
Frustrate them senseless that your wedge game is so good.
Yep, totally agree. And that actually came up a couple of weeks ago with one of the girls that I teach, and she was enjoying the fact that there was another girl in the group that every time she goes to a tournament, this girl is there, and she outdrives everyone by 20, 30 yards. But my student and a couple of the others that work with other teachers in the area were saying that we know that when we get on the green, she's going to three putt every hole. she's not only going to three putt, but she can. We don't even know if her chip is going to end up within a certain distance from the hole. So they're not worried anymore that the girl outdrives them by so far every hole.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely a good insight. So when you pick up the track with a new beginner junior golfer, what are some of the key things you help them do to start developing? I mean, it's tough for kids because I think the hardest part for a kid in golf is just the hand-eye coordination portion of it, trying to figure out how to get this 3-foot club to hit a 1-inch golf ball. So how do you help these kids start out?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what I always ask the kids is like, what other sports do you play? And how long have you been playing it? Do you still play it? Stuff like that. What level are they on in that sport? And they may be beginners in all of the sports they're playing as well. So that kind of gives me an introductory place to start. And so I'll do little things in terms of skill development, which is, it's related to golf, but it's not throwing a club in their hands right away. It might be underhand tosses to targets, stuff like that. And that kind of helps them with distance control or landing areas for chip shots, pitch shots, stuff like that. And we usually will start practices that way, where our warm-up will be, all right, I want you to pick up these tennis balls and throw them to the basket or something like that. But definitely for beginners, what I'll do is I'll show them what the club does first. Hey, this is a wedge. This is the face. This is the putter, et cetera, like that. And then what I'll do is I'll then start to tell them or teach them what certain skill is related to that club. So it might be putting, for example, and then what I'll do is I'll show them not only what they're supposed to be doing while the ball's rolling to the hole and getting in the hole in as few shots as possible, but how does the club help them perform that task?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's kind of a, you know, it's always interesting because the further away we get from the club face, the harder it is to control that club face, right?
Yep, so it just seems to get smaller.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's, I think the biggest thing for, I think that's what I think I like about snag golf, right? And when the tennis balls and the plastic clubs, like, you know, even the beginner kid could figure out how to get the tennis ball on the size of a, you know, plate dish. And so I think, you know, when it comes like with urban kids, I think that's the thing I love about watching your social media accounts and on Instagram is that you got these kids doing all kinds of cool stuff, swinging baseball bats and doing interesting workout stuff in the cart barn. You know, I think you got I think you got a great little system there. And I think that's what I liked about watching that is that you develop skill maybe before you even develop technique.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things that I do here that we all do is that we create tasks for them. And we know in this day and age, the kids, their attention spans are much shorter. So what we do is we keep the instruction very simple, very short, and then we have the kids work on it. So there's a moment of self-discovery there and then just trying to figure it out. And we also introduce a lot of Goldilocks. So if they, let's say, putt a ball and it goes too far, I might tell them, well, don't necessarily try to make the putt into the hole. If you just putted it 6 feet past the hole, can you make one 6 feet short? And sure. So they're going back and forth, short and long. And so what happens is they start to see little golden nuggets, even in their misses. And what I start to, and then I bring it up to them and say, look, if you were good enough to hit it 6 feet past, and now you're good enough to hit it 6 feet short, don't you think you're pretty good enough to hit it in somewhere in between, which will be closer to the hole? And they get all of a sudden you see the light bulb go on.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So we do a lot of stuff where we teach them the skill, and then we either play a game or we do something that reinforces that skill.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny too, cause like I was just working with a kid on putting yesterday and he asked me, like, you know, how do you control pace when you go play a bunch of different golf courses? And so I showed him a little drill that I picked up where you just take the putter and you make the stroke from toe to toe, you keep the tempo consistent, and however far the ball rolls out, it rolls out. And you hit like maybe three or four balls, and you get a grouping, and then you pace it off. So it might be seven steps, the group average from where you stood. And it just kind of lets you have a base idea for pace on a normal stroke. And so what was funny was the grouping he made of those four balls when he didn't really care and he was just trying to keep the tempo the same were within the size of my hat. And then I sprinkled all those golf balls out around the hole, and there are various distances, 5 yards, 7 yards, 10 yards, whatever it was. And every time he got to a 7-footer, he never got it within that same kind of distance. So I kind of looked at him like, do you not trust the process, or was it you're trying to force it? And so it's interesting when you take a skill set, you know, where they can easily do it, but then we put them in a situation where they might have some self-doubt. It's crazy how that can affect what we've already trained them to do.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, that exact same thing that you were doing was something I was doing with a lot of the kids yesterday as well, actually the last few days. And just showing them that whatever that benchmark is, like you said, seven paces, it's now when you have a putt and let's say it's 10 paces, you have a starting point already to adjust from instead of kind of guessing, gee, I hope this is right for this distance. I hope I don't screw up or hit it too hard or too soft. It's like, all right, take a couple of practice swings with that seven step swing or that tempo. And you know, it's going to be either a little longer or a little faster, whichever you prefer in terms of your stroke. Sure. And it's like, they're looking at me like, what'd you just pull this out of the hat or something like that? And it's like, it's for me, it's good to hear you suddenly mentioning something like, hey, you know, someone else does it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's funny. You talk about the rabbit out of the hat. The first question he asked was because the place he practices has lightning fast greens. They stimp like 13 and a half on a regular basis. And he goes, how should I practice if I have to practice on greens that are slower? I said, hit every putt uphill.
Yeah.
And he kind of looked at me and was like, well, that seemed a lot easier than I thought you were going to tell me.
it's funny that was the same thing. I had a couple of the kids ask me about it yesterday. And I said that, well, the great thing about this is that everything changes from day to day. It's like, today you might be seven steps and tomorrow you may wake up in the morning and you feel awful and you go out and you to a putting green, you do it and it's five steps or sure. You had a great night of sleep and it's 12 steps. And it also has to do with you come to one golf course and it's 7 steps, and you go to another golf course and it's 10 steps, that same swing. So what is that telling you? Oh, the greens are faster. There you go. It's like you just adjusted to the speed of the greens. It's you just realize these greens are faster. That's all.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's funny, man. And it's just it's always interesting to work with kids when you have like these kind of light bulb moments where they want it to be a convoluted answer, and you're like, no, it's pretty simple. Sometimes you can, it's okay to be simplified.
Yep.
So when you're working with a lot of kids and as they progress, how do you help them figure out goals or set benchmarks, track their progress so that, you know, so that they know that they're getting better and that, you know, it's not always an uphill climb too, right? You know, sometimes we hit a peak and we kind of stumble. Maybe it's because of a growth spurt. Maybe it's because something happened within the family, whatever. But then how do you kind of help them track the progress, maybe recover from a little bit of a dip and keep setting goals to improve?
Yeah, I think it's like, I don't care how old they are, you have to give them specific goals to set. And it may be sort of an informal thing where you're going, well, what did you do last week? Or it could be more formal where it's charted and logged. But, there has to be something that you got to keep in mind. Like, how many attempts does it take you to make 10 putts from 3 feet? Something like that. If there's someone that plays more competitively, some of the stats that you want to keep now. And I know there's a lot of things out there that you can use in terms of charting all these things. And I've seen it on Facebook forums where pros are asking, teachers are asking, what app do we use or something? And I might be a little old school in this, but I try to create my own charts for the kids. And I think what happens is that the kids and the parents see that you're making an effort instead of kind of throwing them an app, which you still can do. You can say, by the way, this will help you do this.
Definitely.
But I think you want to show them that everything is organic, so to speak, that you are the one sitting at home at night doing an Excel spreadsheet and creating these charts and stuff like that. But because what happens is I think that inherently, if they start to see that you're making that kind of effort, they're going to put that kind of effort in.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head earlier on already was that we live in a day and age that, you know, access to information is at your fingertip.
Yep.
And to have kids sit down and actually like handwrite notes or handwrite goals or, you know, and take that little bit of extra effort. I mean, it can actually be a challenge because we're so used to just like, you know, asking the question to your phone, you know, who's the best golfer on the planet?
Yep. You know? Yep.
And so I definitely think there's a lot of merit to what you just said that, you know, if the kids see you putting in that kind of effort, then, you know, it can definitely rub off onto them as well. And sometimes you have to have that frank conversation with them too, where it's like, I've had to have with one of my kids not too long ago. It was like, hey, look, buddy, I love you and I'll do anything for you. But at the end of the day, I can't text you to remind you to come to practice. I can't text you to remind you to come to workouts. It's like, sometimes you have to take that ownership. I'm here for you if you need help. But at the end of the day, you have to be the one to remember that you have a lesson tomorrow.
Yep. I have those conversations all the time about taking care of your equipment. It's your responsibility. It's not, I don't care if you're a 7-year-old playing in your first U.S. kids golf tournament. It's not your parents' responsibility to make sure you have 7 golf balls in your bag and tees and ball marks and all that kind of stuff. That's your responsibility. You have to start doing that from day one. Even kids that are showing up to camps, it's like I see them running up and the parents are carrying 3 bags in their hands. And I tell them, it's like, unless you're paying your parents a percentage of your earnings.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, it's like you better start learning to take care of your own clubs, your own bags, carry your stuff and whatnot. And I tell the parents the same thing. It's like they have to learn responsibility for their stuff. And I tell them it's like, this is only going to help you.
That's right. I mean, that is always the one that it baffles me when you see the parent lugging the bag up to the lesson tee and then the kid hits all the balls. And then the kid just like grabs his water ball and starts walking to the car. And the parent has to grab the bag behind him. And I'm like, what just happened?
Yep.
So speaking of that parent-child relationship, how do you, you know, talk to the parent or the kids about expectations and you know, how they're progressing and, you know, kind of keeping everybody's mindset even keel while there may be some ups and maybe some downs? I mean, sometimes it's, almost just as detrimental to sit on that high as it is to sit in the lows. So how do you kind of converse that with the parent and the kid?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think what especially for teachers that are going to specialize in junior golf development, it's that you're not just teaching the kids, it's you're really educating the parents as well. And it's a difficult process. It's a little tricky. You have to be confident in what you're saying and what you're doing, but in the long run, it's beneficial to everyone involved. And what you're doing is you're telling the parents as well as the kids that expectations, they should be praised, but you're also tempering them because there's so many ebbs and flows to the game. And progress, like you mentioned, progress can be slowed, but it's not a reflection on the child or the instruction being given necessarily. It might be due to a growth spurt or something else that's going on at school or family. A kid might have broken up with their boyfriend or girlfriend or something like that, or they just failed a test, for instance. Mm-hmm. So it could be any one of a number of factors that are affecting them. And so, yeah, you're definitely talking to the parents. The other thing is especially as the kids get more serious, is that the parents have to realize there's a huge difference between competitive golf and golf. They are two different animals.
Absolutely.
And the other thing, and so I'm telling the parents, you have to lay off, you have to back off. Maybe you should just drop the kids off for the tournament and then go find a Starbucks to sit at for the next few hours and then come and pick them up. Just to see if there's a difference in the way that the child plays versus you following them for every hole. But I also educate the kids about it as well. And me being a parent, I understand this, which is probably why a lot of the parents listen to me or talk to me about it, is that for the parents, I'll say the kids will get frustrated. They'll be upset. Well, they'll lash out. They're just looking for something to blame in that moment. So they may yell at you. So parents understand that. Hey, put your hands up in the air. Sure, no problem. They're just blowing off steam. And hopefully later on, they'll come up to you and say, hey, mom, sorry, I yelled at you there. But at the same time, for the kids, what I let them know is nobody loves you more than your parents. The reason why you're having this experience now is because your parents are doing something. They're sacrificing something. They're paying for this so that you can have this moment. And so you have to appreciate that there's nothing that a parent hates more or feels more helpless over than watching their own child struggle at something. And so the parents, when they're standing off to the side and they're watching you triple bogey a hole or hitting two drives out of bounds, they want to run out. They want to hold you. They want to hug you. They want to tell you it's okay. They want to buy you some ice cream. Dad or mom wants to take the driver out of your hand and hit the shot for you. We want to do anything possible, but we can't. And that's the worst, most helpless feeling that a parent can have. So understand the other side of it as well, of why your parents are – sometimes your mom and dad are saying something to you just simply because they're looking for any answer they can think of.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the tough part for, you know, any parent, is that it's not so much the it's not so much that they have like the guilt or the disappointment in the child. It's just that they don't know how to cope with watching their kid maybe not excel the way they want to see them excel.
Yep, exactly. So,
and then next thing you know, the kid's frustrated, the parent's upset for them, and then the kid's lashing out at the parent's emotions are running high, and the next thing you know, you have a nuclear explosion.
Yep, it just snowballs. Exactly.
And, you know, I think it's almost sometimes it's interesting. It's almost harder for the parent who's played golf, maybe at a collegiate level or something like that, than it is for the parent who's never played. And there's actually a phenomenon going on down here in Tennessee that lacrosse is one of the fastest growing sports in this state. And the number one reason why is because nobody in the last generation has ever played the game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I grew up in Pennsylvania. I grew up playing lacrosse. And so, you know, it's fun for me to watch the sport take off down here, but it's interesting that over half the kids responded that the reason why they're picking up the game is because mom and dad don't have any clue how the game works other than the ball has to go in the net.
Right.
And they don't know that how a good game or a bad game would look. And so it's, you know, it's kind of interesting. I kind of lay that out for some parents every once in a while as far as golf goes. It's like sometimes it's good to act like the dumbest person on the golf course. and let your kids think that, so that they don't feel like they're trying to be told something to do.
Right.
And it was just interesting for me when I heard that lacrosse stat, that I think that's something a lot of parents could take away, is like, act fully dumb. Ask your kid the simplest questions and make them feel good that they know the answers to it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So
it's definitely a interesting one. I think golf sometimes has one of the higher parent to kid kind of like tensions in some other sports, because you know, there's no other Johnny or Sally out on the field. If you make a mistake, that you can blame it on. Right. And so that's where like baseball, basketball, you can easily dish it off to the refs on a bad call or something like that. In golf, it's like,
yep,
no, it's all on you, kiddo.
Yeah. I mean, like up around here, the soccer moms, they call them and stuff. It's like, or up north, the hockey moms, the hockey dads, and there's always someone else to blame. So it's almost like, well, the reason why you didn't play well was because the referee sucked and sure, or something like that. And so then the kid starts to go, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I got a lot of bad calls today. That's why I didn't play better. And so there's sort of like that gang up mentality.
Yeah.
In golf, what are you going to do? You're going to yell at the golf course?
Blame the superintendent for the hole cuts.
Yep, exactly.
No, it's interesting. And with that, though, you know, it's funny that, and I think that's the part I like about golf versus the other sports, was that, I mean, at least for me when I was growing up, like there was nothing worse for me when I was playing a lacrosse or a hockey game, having a great game and then losing. Like, you know, like me personally playing out of my mind and then only to look up at the scoreboard and see we're getting beat in the face by six or something.
Yep.
You know, and it's like with golf, it was so rewarding that when I put in the effort, it showed, you know, and then when I didn't put in the effort, it showed, you know, and I think that's what, you know, this next generation coming up needs more of, is that, you know, there's, you know, mommy and daddy are there to provide the resources, but you have to be the one that's resourceful and become better for yourself.
Yep. It's all on you after a while.
Definitely. So I know you work with a lot of kids, and I get this question a lot from parents, and I'm curious to hear your insights on the golf club transition, because, you know, there's nothing more difficult than having a, you know, 10, 12 year old, 13 year old. They're making the transition. They're growing really fast. They're swinging faster. You know, how do you help the kids with, as far as trying to decide when to transition from, you know, maybe a U.S. Kids Club set to an adult set? And how do you kind of, what are you looking for, and how do you go about it?
Well, I know for me, where I start to really pay attention to that is right around that 57 inch category.
Mm-hmm.
Right in that area is when they're starting to possibly be graduating into adult clubs. And so what I'll do is I'll just kind of keep an eye on their swing speed, especially if they're kids using the Tour Series clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Cause obviously they'll have higher swing speeds. And so when they start to get compatible to adult swing speeds, I'll hand them something like, say, a women's 7-iron, women's driver, or a senior 7-iron or driver. And what I'm asking them to do is just hit some balls and see if there's a difference. And what I'm paying particular attention to is if there is a noticeable drop off in either the ball speed or the swing speed.
Right.
So I'll obviously be on a launch monitor when we're doing that. And so that's something to pay attention to. The other thing is that initially there'll be the wow factor. Everyone always hits the new driver better than their current driver.
Sure.
In a demo day. And sure, it's no different with the kids. It's like the minute they, because they're already thinking, ooh, adult club, I just graduated. So
the benchmark in life.
Yeah, it might be too heavy for them. And if you ask them, is that too heavy? No, it's fine. It's good. As they're falling over.
That's absolutely right.
And so they'll hit it further. They'll hit it higher and stuff. They'll be those wow things. And so what I'll ask them to do is I want you to take that 7-iron and I want you to go play a few holes with it. No driver, nothing. Just take the 7-iron, a wedge, and a putter. Play a few holes, because I want to see if at the end of those handful of holes, are they exhausted? Does the club feel like an anvil all of a sudden?
Yeah.
And so they may be ready to hit that club on the range, but I don't know if they're ready to play with it because of that factor. The other side of it is that they may be ready for it because it's not like we're hitting a ball every 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
The club's back in the bag, they're walking or they're riding.
Sure.
So, but that's something that I like to keep an eye on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the thing I've said in the past is, you know, it's kind of the same thing. I tell them, you know, once you get to about 5 feet tall and you can move your driver over 75 miles an hour,
yeah,
it's worth a look.
You definitely. Yeah. I mean, it like even on Instagram, it kills me to see these 6-year-old kids with an adult driver in their hand. And it's just it takes a lot of restraint to not post a comment.
Like, wait,
what are you doing? What are you doing? Sometimes what I'll do is I'll type it out just to make myself feel better. And then I'll hit delete.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, though. And it's funny. I think US Kids does the best as far as, you know, having the appropriate size for the clubs. And, you know, I think as they get a little older, sometimes their arms may be a little longer, a little shorter. So those clubs may not fit perfectly. So you might have to choke down or something. But
right.
It gets pretty close. The ones that crack me up are like, these big name brands that have clubs, and they're like, for kids 5 to 9 years old. I'm like, dude, what?
Yeah.
I'm like, and then all of a sudden when they turn 10, the clubs get 6 inches longer. I'm like, hold on. Like, explain this logic to me.
Yeah. I just had a dad 2 weeks ago show up with his kid, and it's the same thing. Well, he's 9. And so we got him this set, and the driver comes up to the boy's chin. And I told the dad at the end of the lesson, it's like the biggest reason why he's having trouble with hitting the ball is because the kids are too big. The clubs are too big. Oh, really? Oh, you think he can choke up? So what I did was I took the dad's driver, because he was hitting balls while the kid was taking a lesson. And I put the driver up. And, of course, it's up to his sternum or something like that. And
yeah.
And then I put my hand at the end of his driver and then put it up under his chin. And I said, that's how long his driver is. Imagine your driver being this long. How do you think you're going to feel? And
I mean, that's a great point, though.
He kind of got it. And then he sort of was like, well, you know, maybe. So what I did was I ran right into the shed, which is like about 20 feet away. And I pulled out a flag stick.
Nice.
I handed him the flag stick. And I said, I want you to make about 3 or 4 swings with that stick. And he swings it and he goes, wow. And I said, you see how you're stumbling every time you swing? That's exactly what your son looks like. So, and he goes, and you can see the big grin on his face. And it's, I get it. Yeah, I see. We'll go get him a new set. Yeah, I said, this set that you have now will be great for him in about 3 years. So just keep it in the garage and pull it out in about 2 or 3 years.
Perfect. Yeah, exactly right. So with that, you know, there's a lot of tournaments that kids are in. And, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, I guess the benchmark for some junior golfers, you know, how you perform in tournaments. So what do you do with your kids to help them prepare for, you know, tournament events? And, you know, what do you think it's important for them to focus on? Maybe not necessarily in, you know, per players, like, you know, driving and teeing off and stuff like that, but like whether it's the mental part of getting prepared or the nutrition part or the preparation of a practice round, what do you have your kids doing to get ready for tournaments?
Yeah, it's kind of a combination of all of that. So if we start with nutrition, just telling them, don't wait till you're hungry. Don't wait till you're thirsty. Be drinking your water constantly, one sip every shot or a couple of sips every hole, maybe a full bottle of water every 2 or 3 holes, something like that. Make sure you get in the habit of doing it, having something as a snack. And when I say snack, I don't mean Snickers bars.
That's right.
I want something where, whether it's fruits like bananas, apples, peanut butter and jelly on a whole wheat bagel or something like that, anything.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. So we've talked about that. What I ask them to do is play more, play holes, play different shots when they're at their, like, so if they're not playing here regularly, if they're a member at a different course, I'll ask them, tee off from the different tee boxes. Don't keep playing the same shots over and over again. Or if there's no one in front of you, no one behind you, play a tee shot from each of the different tee boxes. So if there's 4 tee boxes per hole, play 4 different shots.
Yeah. Yep.
And even to the point of like, all right, play a tee shot on every tee box and then play the worst ball out of those the rest of the hole, something like that. Just different challenges, play for score. Set benchmarks for yourself per hole. Maybe on a particular hole, you're telling yourself, I'm only going to hit knockdowns on this shot, on this hole. Or every 3 holes are different, like only knockdowns, only punch shots, because I know the weather condition is going to be windy next week. something like that.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of it too that, you know, I like when I work with a lot of high school kids and they're, you know, they have like, I call them their quote unquote majors, right? You know, like US Junior AM qualifying or US Open qualifying, State AM, State Junior, stuff like that. That's, you know, they're big events. You know, what I tell them is don't prepare for the event that you just had. Prepare for the event that's coming up.
Right.
So, I mean, it's really easy to go out and play in a tournament and you miss, I don't know, let's say you miss 12 greens, right? You hit it horribly with your irons. Well, then the next thing you want to focus on is you're going to hit a whole mess of 7 irons or 8 irons, something like that. And then you might go to the next tournament and it might be really short and you hit driver wedge a lot.
Right.
Now you focus on hitting all these mid-range irons and you might hit 4 of them on the 4 par 3s.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
So what I have a lot of those kids thinking is like, where's the next golf course you're playing? Have you played your practice round yet? And what steps are you taking to practice for those shots you know you have coming up?
Right.
So
exactly.
And I think that's what helps, you know, one of the questions I had lined up for you was, you know, I think that helps with the kids that are struggling to get that first win or to shoot under par, right? Is that there's sometimes it's maybe a little bit too much focus on what happened in the past instead of what can happen in the future.
Yeah. I mean, I have a couple of students right now where they're right at the threshold of being like really top juniors nationwide. And what's happening with them is something is going on within the last 3 or 4 holes that they're playing that just sabotages their round. So they could be, let's say, shooting 1 over par going into 16 and they end up with a 77.
Oof.
So what happened? Were they thinking about their score? Were they suddenly aware of what they were doing that deviated from their norm? And those are the little things that we're looking at. And I know with one of the kids, it's the fact that they were shooting under par for the first time, not just under par in their life, but it's under par competitively. And so that just got to them because then they bogeyed that hole. But the thing is they bogeyed it, yet they were still under par for the round. But they suddenly thought they have to get that shot back.
Amen.
And so little things like that start to snowball on them. So some of it is more mental. Obviously, it's not physical because something got them there to begin with. And so it's more how they were approaching those last couple holes. Maybe it was nutrition. Maybe they ran out of gas. So those are the things that we're kind of looking at right now.
I mean, that's definitely right. I mean, nutrition, I think, is one of the easiest things to overlook. Because like with kids, it seems like they have endless amounts of energy, right? And then all of a sudden it's like a wall hits and it's like, you just notice like there's just this huge drop off in energy and attention to detail. And you're like, what is going on? And it's so simple to like, just sit there and go, oh, they're getting lazy. They're not into it. And then in the back of your mind, you have to sit there and go, well, little Susie hasn't drank any water since 11. So this could be a problem. You know, and it's funny that you mentioned, you know, every few holes, stuff like that is, you know, I tell my kids to write it on their scorecard. On this hole, I'm going to have a drink. I'm going to finish this bottle of Gatorade. On this hole, I'm going to finish this trail mix Ziploc or whatever. And just so that when they look at their card, it's like constantly in their face. Oh, yeah, I need to drink that Gatorade right now.
Yep.
You know, and have it in the back of their mind. But then to your point about the trying to shoot under par for the first time, it's like I tell my kids, you know, play like 3 hole matches or something simple like that. And every 3 holes, it restarts.
Yep.
And so, yeah, you know, you might be 300 par through 15, but you have a whole new 3-hole segment coming up for 16, 17, 18. And how are you going to play 16, 17, and 18?
Right. You know, I agree.
You know, what was the benchmark? Was it to play it 1 over? Was it to play it even? Was it to play those 3 holes 1 under? And that way, it just kind of like resets your brain. And even if the round's going good or bad, you know, even if you've played the first 9 holes, 9 over, you know, at least you have another 3-hole segment coming up.
You know, it's funny, not to deviate from the subject, but you had reminded me of a minute ago about one student that I have, and we were having this conversation about why he keeps fading on the last few holes. And so we were talking about nutrition. And so the question I asked him was, so are you eating to keep up your energy? And he goes, yeah, I'm eating. So I said, all right, well, it can't be that. And so we're talking like, I said, well, he said, what happens to you? It's, oh, I just feel like I'm losing energy. He's like, but you're eating, right? Yeah, I'm eating. And it began to realize, well, what are you eating? Well, chicken nuggets and then French fries. And, I'm going, wait a minute, you're eating this while you're playing? And he just looks at me and goes, no, home.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, no, not after the round.
Yeah, that's amazing.
What is that going to help you?
Oh, man, I tell you, it is comical sometimes, the answers you get. And, yeah, but that's, you know, to that point, though, it's like, it's funny to me that, like, you know, the most, you know, I guess the most popular item you'll see at a turn is the hot dog, right?
Yep, yep.
And I'm like, oh, my God, please don't eat that hot dog. You're eating that hot dog. Oh, you got two hot dogs. Great. Perfect. So with that, you know, we have the nutrition side we've talked about enough, I think, at this point, but you do a lot of, you know, not just golf training, but like workout trainings. I see it with your kids, and you're doing cool stuff with balance and strength conditioning. And, you know, a lot of these kids are still young, and, you know, obviously we're not promoting lifting weights, but there's a lot of things that you can do for your kids that promote balance, stability, just general coordination. Right.
Right.
Talk to us about what you do and why you think it's so important.
Well, definitely a lot of that is just, I get a lot of this stuff from my TPI background, and that's really important. That's for a lot of coaches out there. That's if you're looking at something to check into, I would look into that for sure. And the second thing I do is I have a lot of good resources for material. So I speak a lot to people like, Ali Gilbert or Michael Hoxson, Michael Manavian, those type of people who are in this field and who understand this kind of information way better than I do. And whenever I think about doing something, I ask them, is this okay? Am I doing the right thing? Because I am not a fitness expert. That's their field. So If you're looking at doing something like that, make sure you have someone on your team that specializes in that field. That's really important, because you obviously don't want to, as much as we're trying to do the right thing, we don't want to send them on the wrong path right off the bat.
Definitely. So
having said that, a lot of the stuff that I do, balance stuff, it's balance discs and setting up obstacle courses to get them going through it. So it's non-golf. While it is related to golf, it's developing their coordination skills, their balance skills. And we do a lot of stuff with that, elastic band stuff. And some of the, even some of the very lightweight stuff that we do in terms of what you want to call quote unquote weightlifting, it's very basic stuff. And what I'm trying to get the kids to understand is that fitness should be part of their lives. They could quit golf tomorrow, but fitness is going to be a part of their lives. And I want them to realize that there should always be time put out for that kind of stuff. And if you are going to be serious, if you're going to be a serious competitive golfer, if you're going to turn around and play soccer or you're going to do baseball or any other sport, the fitness component is going to be a major part of it. And it's no different for golf.
No, definitely. And, you know, I started doing some of that with my kids over this past winter. And, you know, it was a very eye-opening experience. Putting kids through simple things like some basic yoga poses, balance, simple pull-ups and push-ups, you know, just body weight stuff where you should be able to move your own body weight around.
Yes.
And, you know, I remember being like 8, 9 years old and doing monkey bars till I'm blue in the face. And meanwhile, I had a couple of kids that didn't hold on to the bar.
Yep.
But they're, you know, hanging from a pull-up bar. You know, and it's just interesting how different with the day and age of internet and video games, how, like you said, to make fitness a part of your life, it's a struggle sometimes.
It's yep. No, that's me. Sorry. I touched something by accident. It's
so good.
It's, yeah, I was speaking to someone the other day about this. And, one of the things I noticed is that, I mean, especially junior golf coaches, but definitely we do it in general, is we try to cross-reference other sports. So we might say something to a student, either adult or a junior, all right, I want you to take this ball. I want you to throw it, toss it, do this, step into a pitch or whatever, hit a tennis ball, something. And what I'm noticing more and more is that the second sport that we're referring to, they're just as bad at that, if not worse. And so it's less and less of, okay, I want you to take this ball and I want you to throw it. do now is I actually have to teach them how to throw it as well.
Yeah.
And that's something that's reflective of what you were just saying, this iPad generation. We're not in the playgrounds anymore. Gym classes are getting cut from curriculums. Budgets are getting cut. And so, you know, we're starting to get more into that. What was the movie? WALL-E?
Yeah.
Right. And that we're starting to get more and more sitting on the couch, lying in bed, looking at our iPhones and iPads and doing stuff like that. And yeah, it's disturbing. It's something that's a concern for me. I know personally is that I have to teach two sports now instead of one.
Yeah. I mean, I remember you talking about the whole just teaching people how to throw a baseball. You know,
yep.
And, you know, it's interesting to me. Like, I remember I was sitting down with one of my kids and we were just talking about how much he's going to practice this summer. And because I write out a game plan for him and just kind of wanted to get a beat on what was realistic. And he said, we sat there and we deduced that because you were talking about Xbox, we deduced that he spent one entire month of every year for the last 4 years on his Xbox. Like, that many hours on the screen. He wasted one entire month. And I'm like, do you realize you only lived 11 months last year? And you slept for like four of those? So with that, Mr. Hong, I'll give you a bag of donuts if you can give us a great reference to walk away with for some parents and some great advice as we wrap up our podcast today.
Yes, for the parents, just understand that the results that you're getting for today or tomorrow are not the most important things in the world. The most it's just, are they going out there? Are the kids having fun? Are they enjoying themselves? Temper what you're asking them, coaches as well. Instead of always pointing out what went wrong, what did they do badly, making them feel small about themselves. You should be asking them, what do you think you did well today? I mean, it's something that I keep mentioning over. What do you think you did well on that shot? What did you do well on that hole? And then the next question is not, well, what did you think you did bad? Just because you said, what did you do well? What did you do not well? No, what you're asking them next is, what do you think you could do better? Because, I brought this up just now, just earlier with someone in that, I think it was on a tweet. Yeah, it was. Is that if you asked a child, what did you do well on that swing on the range? They actually have to search for an answer. It's amazing that they can't think of praise for themselves. And then if you ask them, what did you do badly? They'll come up with 15 things that they did wrong.
Amen.
Right. And so instead of saying that, why don't you just ask them, what do you think you could do better? Oh, you know, I think I could hold my finish a little bit better. Okay. Why don't you go try and do that? It's as simple as that.
And, you know, it's funny you say that because I'm going to piggyback off you real quick. I was in a playing lesson with a dad and his son. And it was perfect. It couldn't have laid out any better. We're on a par five. He was trying to hit three wood down there to give himself a wedge. There's bunkers all up the right side. And so I tell the kid, you see the flag? He goes, yeah. I said, you can hit it anywhere left of the flag and you'll have a great wedge shot coming in. Dad right behind me goes, yeah, don't hit it right. So
yeah.
where's the ball go? Straight in that bunker. Right. I said, okay, you be quiet. Let's try this again. Anywhere left of the flag, you'll be perfect. Flushed it, hit wedge on. It was great from there. And the dad kind of had the highlight. Okay, I get it. I'm sorry. I want to stop talking now.
Yep.
But I think it just kind of reinforces that the do not do this, can't do that, the nots that we have incorporated in our language, it speaks highly into how we think.
And yep,
the
exactly.
Best thing I tell them is pink elephants. And then everybody's head right now is about to explode with a pink elephant floating in the air, you know?
Exactly.
You know? And so, yeah, continue on. I had to throw that in there.
No, I think that's a great point is that we keep thinking of the negative aspects of what we're doing. And I think that once or twice, yeah, that's fine. But if that's a constant, then all we're thinking about is how am I going to screw up the next shot? What am I going to do badly on this one? How am I going to make this worse instead of looking at the other side of it? I'm like, all right, I'm going to pipe this drive. you know, I'm going to hit this ball as good as I can hit it. And wherever it goes, as long as I know I hit it as good as I can hit it, that's all I want to do.
Amen, my friend. Amen. Well, Mr. Hong, I appreciate your time today. I think you've enlightened a lot of us with some great insights, and I appreciate you taking your time out of your busy schedule. And hopefully it's not insanely hot up there like it is down here in Tennessee most days. So, again, I appreciate the time. How can people reach out to you if they're in that New York area and they want to touch base with you? What's the best way for people to reach out?
Well, you can reach me by email very easily. My email address is jhon@palmergolf.com. And office number 516-767-4818. You can also find me on Twitter at James Hong Golf, and on Facebook, same thing, at James Hong Golf, as well as actually all three of them. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
And you know what? It's really original. Awesome. Well, great stuff, man. Like I said, I really appreciate it. And everybody listening is going to appreciate it too. So thank you for your time today. And I look forward to chatting again soon.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, brother. I'll talk to you later.
You got it.
See ya.
Well, that's a wrap for this interview. As you can tell, James has a lot of knowledge to share. It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of good chats. I think everybody can walk away with something from this podcast. So I hope you enjoyed it. We will be interviewing a member of Bobby Clampett's studio down in Naples, Florida, hopefully in the upcoming weeks. I was trying to coordinate something with her. She's finishing up some of her PGA requirements. And then also, Brett McCabe has agreed to come on the podcast, so I'm looking forward to having his insights. He is one of the most referred mental gurus out there right now in the golf circuits as well as other sports. He is a fantastic author as well with great nuggets. So very fortunate, and we'll be looking forward to having him on in the near future as well. So until then, junior golfers, parents, enjoy your summer season as it kicks off and gets rolling here, as this is probably the first real week you've had without school. And have fun and enjoy.